Thanks, Rob. Welcome back to the download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in Studio 435 tonight, My Gold Mask. Wow, that's going to be fun, man. That's one of my favorite segments of the week. Live music in studio right here on Michigan Avenue. We're going to have a blast coming up here in the 10 o'clock hour. Well, next month, the new movie Trainspotting 2 is going to hit theaters 21 years after the original took the states by storm. It was fun going back and watching the trailer today just to refresh my memory on the characters and just remembering time and place from when I was, you know, 20 years ago watching Trainspotting. The movies are based on the brilliant novels and characters written by Irvine Welsh. Welsh, a Scottish-born writer, has lived all over the world, but currently living right here on the north side of Chicago. He worked at Columbia College in the fiction writing department for a minute, and that's where he met his collaborator and longtime friend, Don DeGrazia. DeGrazia is also a novelist. He got great reviews and acclaim for his work, American Skin. The two have collaborated on a new project that is many things in many ways, but for our conversation tonight, it's a rock opera called Creatives. It's going to be on stage at the Edge Theater in Edgewater through March 5th. It's part of the Chicago Theater Workshop, which is an incubator for new and innovative works here in town. Irvine Welsh, Don DeGrazia are in studio with me tonight. Guys, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I want to talk all about both of your careers and talk about the work, but let's get right to Creatives, because this is something, as just kind of looking through the last couple years of this, this is a project that has been a screenplay, it's been a regular play, it's now a rock opera. Talk about this project and why you guys keep coming back to it.
Well, it started, I would say, I don't know, like at least four or five years ago. We've been good friends for a long time, and actually neighbors for a long time there on the north side. And so we hang out, we run into each other, that sort of thing. And we ran into each other, as common, on the street on Southport. And we went into a bagel shop, got something to eat. And from that conversation came this idea that we're talking about stuff, right? And from that conversation came this idea that we should write this, we should spend our summer writing this screenplay. And that's how this saga started. So.
Yeah, I mean, it was a way of avoiding kind of wasting the summer in bars and sort of,
watching the Cubs.
Watching the baseball and stuff. Yeah. So we decided we're going to do something productive. And we just went for it. It was quite nice. It was quite a fun, organic process. We didn't really have any big expectations of it. And we saw it originally as a very 12 Angry Men type sort of, very kind of independent, kind of quite a rough, independent local film made here, which had been good fun. And then we realised that because it's all happening in one space, it is a classic black box, mm-hmm. Playmore. And I think because it was quite talky as we perceived it.
Okay.
And it is something that probably lends itself more to theater than to cinema. You're not using the full potential.
And it's really about a class. I mean, at the heart of it, it's about a music class. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's about a classroom, and kind of to piggyback on what Irvin was talking about as far as the evolution of this thing. When we got into it, rewriting it as a play, it was still kind of a screenplay, becoming a play. This guy, a friend of ours, Pat McKenna, who was from Second City, of course. He was having a series at the Public House Theater called Put 'Em Up, yep. where there would be live
stage readings, right?
Yeah. So we did that. We got actors for all the roles and got a nice big audience there. And Tom Mullen, the guy who did really a great stage adaptation of Trainspotting here in Chicago, Trainspotting USA, actually, mm-hmm. Set in America, he came, of course, and then he was part of the team after that, and he got really into musical theater at some point, but
I think that was when he was 8 years old.
At some point in the womb, he proposed this idea to us, and I think we were both sort of like, absolutely not, man. That is not any at all what we had in mind.
We walked out of that bar going, nah, no way, no way. Then by the time we got down the road, we thought, maybe.
And this was the idea to turn it into a musical or an opera.
Well, if you want to be technical, it's a pop opera, or as the people really in the know call it, a popra. So
we, they do. Okay, yeah. good. Thank you for.
I learned that
being technical
like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, right. So I mean, when you guys were, when that was, that idea was brought to you, the, this concept of taking your words and essentially turning it into some, to a different art form. I mean, I would assume that beyond just sort of the shock of it, of saying, okay, well, we don't really know much about it. I mean, it's a challenge. I mean, for writers to actually make that transition to actually making music out of your words, there's something more of a challenge to that.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about it was that it's quite dark, you know, the subject matter, and it's quite a challenging, very kind of serious piece in some ways. And we thought, is that what, you know, does the levity of the form, of the musical form kind of, you know, does it not kind of push against it a little bit?
Yeah, right.
But I think we managed to get a kind of balance, didn't we, I think?
Yeah, and I do think, you know, I'm... and I joke about the different terms and stuff, but there was a reason why Tom was stressing that it's not a musical. This pop opera approach uses music, I would say, to kind of, I wouldn't say exactly, but similar to like a soundtrack in a film or something
that.
It accentuates the narrative storyline as opposed to...
tells a story, part of the story. Yeah.
Oh, that's a different, I mean, mm-hmm. that gives you guys a lot of leeway in creativity and what music you're going to use and how you're going to use it as opposed to having to push the storyline forward, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of we basically just contacted, because it's a small scale production. We're starting off in a workshop format to try and, you know, to develop it and hopefully kind of grow from there. But we wanted to have kind of really sort of interesting songs, a mixture of kind of composed songs that Lawrence, our composer, has been doing, and kind of big, kind of anthemic kind of sort of mm-hmm. songs. So we kind of approached bands directly to give us some for nothing, let us use them for nothing in this format, because we can't afford to license them, basically. So we got like New Order and Iggy Pop and Simple Minds.
Chance the Rapper.
We've managed to kind of pull favors, really.
Well, it's interesting, too, and we'll talk more about Trainspotting, but, you know, that the music that was actually in the film, you know, like it became more than the movie at a certain point. I mean, the music, you hear some of the tracks that are actually from that movie 21 years ago. You think Trainspotting. You don't necessarily think plot. You think mm-hmm. moment. You think feel. You think emotion. There's something about what music can do to a piece of work.
I think
work.
That's what it does, and you know, and you put it right, Don. It feels more like a kind of. It does feel like a kind of the way that music would be used in film. It feels more kind of, and you know, but obviously the cast are all talented musicians and they're playing the songs mm-hmm. and performing the songs, but it is, you know, it does feel that the music's being used in the piece as a sort of as a kind of moody
like soundtrack.
Sort of,
yeah,
and then there's another level too, which is the fact that the characters, the fictional characters, are writing and performing.
They're performers, right?
So it's still not a musical in that sense, but there's a lot of music.
Loads of music. Yeah.
Don DeGrazia and Irvine Welsh in studio tonight. Their rock opera is going to be on stage, called Creatives. It's on stage through March 5th. When's it start? Does it start this week?
Previews start this Thursday night, and then every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday for the next 3 weeks.
There you go, till March 5th. All right, so we'll take a quick break. We'll come back more with the guys here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with me today. I would say you're a Chicago author now. I was going to say Scottish author, but say Chicago author. Irvine Welsh. Don DeGrazia as well. Irvine, of course, the writer of the novel Trainspotting and Porno, which is the follow up, which is really what's based Trainspotting 2, right? I mean, that's the.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting how that evolved. You know, it started off. You know, the original drafts, I mean, the book's about 15 years old, 14 years old, so the first drafts of it were round about then. And I'm actually glad that we couldn't get it made for all different reasons then, because it would have been the guys would have been in their early 30s rather than their mid to late 40s. So it would have been about another young person's film, really. It would have been, you know, just been about the kind of the further daft capers of these kind of crazy guys, basically. Whereas this one is like, because of the, you've got the mortality and the aging and the kind of there's a lot more emotional levels to it, I think.
Yeah, it's I mean, and I want to get to characters and both of your characters for both the work that you guys do and how it works with creatives as well. You know, when you think about it, it's, when you're writing characters, especially the characters that we saw in Trainspotting, the four guys, there's not that many times where an author gets a chance to write them again years later in their life. And you know, for porno, the idea being that in the same themes and the same, you know, questions they have about the life that they're living comes out decades later. I mean, there's something, what is that process like for the writer?
It's interesting because we don't really, you know, we live in a very individualistic, narcissistic culture now, and we don't really change in the way that we used to. We kind of age a lot differently in terms of, you know, in terms of, you know, our interests and all that. And the digital world has made the whole division between kind of youth and middle age a bit more blurred now because, you know, people listen to the same stuff. It's digitalized. I mean, kids now listen to Pink Floyd and all that stuff.
Right.
And it seems bizarre that, you know, to do that. But it's only because of, you know, the whole death of culture between kind of about 1998 to about 2008. And it's coming back again now. And that's why everybody's so obsessed with it. But yeah, I mean, it is a nice opportunity. And I think when you write characters that are memorable, you take an interest in them. So you do just keep coming back to them anyway.
Well, for both of you guys, I mean, for when we talk about creatives and the project you're both working on now, and this also goes for American Skin, when you talk about characters and you're writing characters, are you guys writing the story of creatives, or are you writing the characters that, you know, that are in that world? I mean, what comes first for you guys?
That's a good question, and I mean, I don't know if I'm sound like I'm being evasive by saying both simultaneously, but that's the immediate answer that comes to mind. We sit down with a concept. I guess the concept for this papra was what came first, I would say. And then we started to fill this place with characters and just put them in situations and kind of see what happens.
I don't know much about it because I haven't seen it, but I will say that not unlike Trainspotting, I mean, in Trainspotting, the theme which was resonated through is this, what kind of life do you want to live? Mm-hmm. You know, like you could live the life of, you know, having a wife and kids and go home, or you could be, you know, like the main characters in Trainspotting that want to do everything they possibly can to not end up there, right? So mm-hmm. they're going to choose a different path. When I hear creatives and I read the synopsis, it's similar in the way that a lot of musicians come together in a class where a teacher is teaching them about music and they have to sort of make a decision on where they want to go in their lives. When you're writers, when you guys are putting that kind of stuff together, what when I think about character arcs and characters, I mean, you have that sort of theme. What are you going to do with your life? But it's the characters that make the work work.
Yeah, sometimes I think you have to kind of almost, you know, trust the characters you create to start to tell the story, you know, and they both start to do that, I think. I think a character who doesn't come with some story isn't really, it's not working as a character. They have to have the story kind of... you know, you have to have a sense of who they are and where they came from and what they're about and what, you know, what things they like and don't like. So you've kind of, there is that kind of, it's not like a hard dichotomy between character and story. They are kind of sort of, they interface all the way, basically. And it's very, you know, it is very difficult. Again, I mean, it's interesting when you work with someone else because... I tend to let the subconscious do the heavy lifting and not really not think about, you know, things too much, and it's like kind of we'll just wrap something out really, and then you look back, don't you? We just sit there. It's almost like rapping, isn't it? We're sitting at a desk, just going do brum bum bum brum bum bum, and then you start to kind of. You look at what you've got as a kind of pattern. You see characters developing in a certain way. You see kind of, and then it's like, trying to impose some kind of order and discipline and the whole thing, and making the whole thing work together.
It might be analogous to a jam session or something, just sitting there and just fiddling around and maybe keeping it on tape, and then going back and listening to what you have and seeing some patterns that emerge. And it has been there's been a lot of discovery along the way, and it's right up until very recently, because this we've really gone back and reworked the story a lot, and a lot of that has really been a matter of heightening themes and storylines that, like Irvin said, have emerged apparently from our subconscious.
Well, I mean, okay, I've
got the
a couple
actors
of questions.
As well, so when you get a bunch of actors, that changes everything too, because
yeah.
And you get to, as a writer, you don't work with actors so much in movies, but on stage you do more. Mm-hmm. You do have a lot more to do with them. And the interesting thing about working with actors is that they're all storytellers too. They're telling stories all the time, and they're telling more than you. The actor's kind of constantly doing loads of jobs every year, and getting in loads of different inside loads of different roles and heads and all that. So they're an incredible resource, and they change the whole thing as well, don't they?
Yeah, and once this thing got cast, for instance, it gave us a clear vision in our mind's eye of who each character was.
Oh,
that's not to say that the characters that are going to be depicted on stage are the real people who are playing them. Absolutely not. But something about
does
their
it,
energy.
It, does it help you as writers to do that, to have that experience?
Yeah, it does me. I mean, I kind of, I like writing books because you're just on your own. You can do everything. You can play God. But you get quite lonely if you're doing it all the time. And I think that for me, if I work in stage or I work in theatre or kind of work in or screen, it's a whole different kind of way of looking at things and doing things. But it is so energizing, and you take a lot of that energy into a book with you, I think.
So much different than sitting alone in a room looking at a piece of paper or a blank screen and just words, as opposed to sitting through a rehearsal, especially in a production like this, where, between actual scenes and stuff, these actors are, plinking on their ukuleles and, testing out their voices.
I guess I never thought about that as writers and novelists. I mean, the idea that you can use a rehearsal process for a play to actually help inform how these characters grow in the drafts of your work, that's impressive. That's interesting.
We're talking about Second City and Pat McKenna. I mean, I just, another play that I've done, I just had a reading with them just a couple of weeks ago. And that's just, the feedback I had from that has just changed the whole draft again, So, I mean, it's like, I think it's particularly useful for stage, because actors that are on stage, they know so much about how things are physically going to work out as well, and that kind of helps inform you when you're writing. It makes you a better writer, I think.
Irvin Welsh and Don DeGrazia in studio with me, two Chicago authors, the new rock opera, the Popera. It's called Creatives. It's on stage at the Edge Theater in Edgewater as part of the Chicago Theater Workshop through March 5th. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Let's talk about those characters. I mean, this really is a popera about struggling artists and trying to find your voice. And again, sort of going at the idea of what this life is that they're living. And we'll talk more with the writers who are in studio, and we'll pick up after the news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. 720 WGN. It's the download here till 11 o'clock with you this hour. Irvin Welsh and Don DeGrazia in studio talking about their new popera, Creatives, which is going to be the Edge Theater in Edgewater through March 5th, part of the Chicago Theater Workshop. Don DeGrazia is a novelist. He had a great, that American Skin, I remember at a different radio station talking about that. That was a big novel and a Chicago, I mean, you sort of became... You guys had like a run there, like the Chicago novelists.
And it's interesting, actually, with that book, the story, the backstory is I couldn't get anyone here to look at it. And I was kind of, down about the whole process of trying to get it published. And then a professor of mine, this guy Andy Allegretti, showed me the New York Times Sunday magazine, and the cover of it was The Beats of Edinburgh. And it was a picture of all the Scottish working class fiction movement that had emerged and just taken the UK by storm. And at the center of it all was this guy, Irvin Welsh, who had written this book, Trainspotting. And it was very exciting. And they mentioned his new publisher, which was Jonathan Cape, that had picked up a lot of these authors. So I went and I sent my book cold to them, and they ended up publishing it.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's really the... That's the origin of this.
Yeah, that's an origin story. That's good. Irvin Welsh sitting right next to you. the man who brought us Trainspotting, the novel, and which was adapted to the movie Trainspotting. Trainspotting 2, which is really off of the follow-up Porno, but also just the characters. Trainspotting is going to be in theaters coming up here in the next month. I mean, for you to look back, I mean, to recognize it's been 21 years. And to have these characters actually live in that space, to be, you know, I don't know if it's accurate in reality, like reality, but the idea that you're coming back to this story, how does that make you feel?
It's interesting. I mean, it's like you kind of to get a film adapted is all. I mean, I've had like 5 books made into films now, and 3 of them have taken 15 years, you know, and. One took 3 years. The first one, Trainspotting. One, The Acid House, took a year, and the rest have all taken 15 years. Like Porno, Ecstasy, Trainspotting, Two, and Filth, have all taken 15 years for various reasons. So, I get from because I wrote the book 15 years ago that it's based on, it doesn't feel like. It's obviously not 20 for me, you know.
Oh, right.
And you know, and the book was published maybe about a few years before the film, so it's kind of you kind of break it down in that way, really.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I mean, the fanfare, we were kind of talking in the break about how many people still will come out, even for events that you guys are involved in, for creatives to sort of fans of Trainspotting. I mean, it really had an impact. Are you surprised at the impact it had, especially here in the States? I mean, it, obviously being a Scottish film and a film that really resonated in the UK.
Yeah, we had a lot of help. These were the days where you could kind of sucker right-wing politicians into making a moral sort of... you know, a moral attack on kind of these films that debase people. Now they're actually too busy debasing people in power to kind of to bother about all that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, it's something that. Sorry, I've lost the.
No, I mean, the idea that there's such fandom for it still, 21 years later.
People holding on for, you know, people still into it. I mean, you know, it's. My Twitter feed, and everybody in the UK has been sending, you know, of that generation have been saying how emotional it felt, you know, being kind of seeing that sort of, you know, because people immediately, you know, if they're off that generation, they look at themselves and look at their own lives and look at what's happened and all that, and they start to think about all the choices they've made, and they get really emotional, you know. I mean, I get stuff on Twitter about people who've kind of who went to the first film together and have gone to the second film together and all that as a group of them.
Yeah, right.
It's just weird how, you know, how much it's kind of meant to people. And I mean, they've been going to see it in their droves. I mean, I think we kind of for 18 certificate films, I think only we're behind 50 Shades of Grey, and I think Hannibal is the, you know, the third British British box office for 18 certificate of all time.
Basically,
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a. It almost, if you think about it, it really was. It was a perfect time for it here in the States. There was really a taste for independent film, especially film that was coming in that wasn't necessarily the same track that you see over and over and over, the formulaic stuff that was passing as independent film. Once Trainspotting came out and done, I feel like that was, so it was something brand new, the novel and the
movie. It changed cinema. It changed the whole thinking on independent film, and it changed literature quite a bit. There's just no doubt about it. That book has been enormously influential. And the fact that, you know, I have students now who are just coming out of their teens or whatever, and there are many of them are all about that book, you know, which is not a brand new book, as we've established.
Well, you know, the conversation we were having before the break was really about characters, and the characters that are in Trainspotting are, I mean, there's something great about, we've been talking about this whole hour, just how they get back together. But there is something about those characters and their stories and how they deal with what's expected of them in life that is what makes that story. Let's talk about creatives in the way that the characters that you guys have put together or that you've created for this for creatives is the same concept of struggling artists. Artists that are trying, musicians who are trying to figure out their way. Are they going to be a pop star that goes after the Grammy? Are they going to be the independent artist that does something different? But these are archetypes in the way that, you know, these are things that musicians have to go through. But as writers, what do you bring to the characters from your own experiences that make these characters unique?
Well, I think we approached it very consciously by looking at songwriting as another form of storytelling, which, you know, is what we do, you know, in prose. So using that as an avenue to relate to these characters first and foremost, I think was the key. But also, I mean, we're both very, you know, it's not unique, but we're both very serious about music and even pop music. You know, it's just an absolutely important part of our lives. So that was definitely a fuel for this as well. So,
yeah. Oh yeah, without a doubt. When you start to think of it in musical terms, you know, it becomes it starts off as being a bit daunting because, you know, neither of us are particularly au fait with the musical as a form, but when you start to think about it in these terms, you just get really excited. You know, you just start thinking about music and you start thinking about the type of people that listen to certain types of music, and that begins to inform the characterization. You know, we've got we have people who are right on, as you say, that kind of, you know, independent sort of pure, like independent rocker, pure artist kind of. This is me expressing myself, mm-hmm. and, you know, to hell with the world. And you've got the very kind of market-driven American Idol aspirant type of person, and where it is about sort of it's principally about fame and money rather than sort of any kind of expression at all. And you've got everything really in between, you know. So, and that's really what the book's about, isn't it? It's about music and the commodification of music and where, and, you know, and music as kind of protest and where all that sits within our culture presently. It's all about that kind of cultural appropriation, isn't it? So it's very much of its time. It's very much about characters who are kind of contesting these cultural wars between them.
Yeah, and I would say that even at the characters that are at different ends of the spectrum, I would say that none of these characters represent one. Like the purists, there's a part of them that still would like some affirmation, some fame, some money. The people who have achieved that want some credibility. You know,
it's like real life. Yeah, right? There's no absolutes in this stuff. Yeah. You know, for you guys, you know, Don, you grew up here, and, you know, American Skin was a Chicago book. I mean, Irvine, you talked about being here for 6, 7, 8 years now. Uh-huh. You know, for you to put this up in an Edgewater theater to do a popra, you know, for both of you had the success that you've had in your careers to be able to have this experience where you're putting up a play in a small black box theater in a nondescript north side of, you know, the city of Chicago. How does that feel? I mean, is that in step with what you guys are talking about?
Yeah. It makes us feel really edgy and like we're keeping it real, man. That's my answer. I'm sticking to it.
No, it's a joy. I mean, it's like, you know, just coming off Trainspotting 2 and working on that and still, you know, we're promoting it. It just feels like a huge monolithic thing that you just have to kind of grab it by the, you know, it's like grab the tiger by the tail and you get pulled along and all that. But you've no control over anything or you know, it's a machine that just runs. And with this, it feels just nice to be working with people very, you know, and just, you know, you're back at a kind of level where there's not perhaps a big expectations, a big commercial expectations, you know, just on the last project. But in some ways, it kind of, these are the kind of things that reignite your passion.
I agree. Know? And I would say that I personally, you know, Irvin's done stage plays before and that sort of thing. I was psychologically resistant to certain aspects of what I saw myself being pulled into, but I got pulled into it just the same. And now at this point, I'm on the same page with Irvin. It's just really exciting. It's fun. I didn't realize how much fun it was going to be. And, inspiring, all of these things that are genuinely true about what this process has become.
Well, there's some ways it's life imitates art, as you guys said, great creatives. And, you know, with the success that you've had, both of you, you know, to be able to do this in a small black box theater for reasons that are creative. I mean, I don't know if at the end of the day you guys are thinking that the agent's going to walk through the door and be like, got to check us out.
Well, we got to write that into the actual story. Right. But one of the things that's been built into this that makes it so nice is, you know, it's the Chicago Theater Workshop, and the operative word there is workshop. It calls itself an incubator for new works. The emphasis is all on development and taking chances and all that. So I'm not going to say it totally takes the pressure off, but it makes it a more creative environment.
And it makes it a kind of environment where the thing can actually grow organically, because you can kind of... as a theatre workshop, you're constantly developing it as you go along. So you need the feedback from the audiences. Yeah. You need people to say, you know, to let you know this was working well, this wasn't working so well, and what can you do about it and all that. And I think that's the spirit we're going into it. And we're seeing it as very much, an opportunity to kind of we've made a creative statement. We've made the musicians and the actors and all that are making a creative statement. But these things always work. It's a Chicago play. It's about Chicago. These things always work if there's a good, strong interface with the community. You get it right. You kind of miss, you know, with the best bill in the world, there's always a reference. It's not, you know, a musical reference or a local reference. I mean, Don's kind of Mr. Chicago. He's steeped in it, basically. And, you know, there's certain things that kind of, whatever you do, music references or whatever, they just slip under the net and all that. They're not quite right. And that's when you get feedback from people saying that, even the way the actors are dressed and stuff like that, it all improves it. It all authenticates that experience. It makes it stronger. And it kind of makes it kind of resonate as a statement about where we are, you know, and who mm-hmm. we are.
Authors Irvin Welsh and Don DeGrazia in studio. Their Popra Creatives is on stage at the Edge Theater in Edgewater starting this weekend through March 5th, part of the Chicago Theater Workshop. Can't thank you guys enough for coming in and talking about your art.
Thanks so much, man.
And good luck with the show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.